Your weekend begins in Crystal Palate's Wine Country with sommelier Crystal Cameron Shad. Every week, Crystal takes your palate on a journey from the vineyard to the glass and opens your mind to the endless choices that await your next sip. Uncork your passion starting now on your trip through Wine Country on Seaville 107.5 and 1260 WCHV.
You're in Crystal Palate's Wine Country. Thanks so much for stopping by today. On today's show, we're talking with Kirk Wiles, the co-founder and CEO of the first bi-coastal winery in the country. Plus, the holidays are right around the corner, and Mike Prieto with Barrel Art will be stopping by to share some great ideas for unique gifts for the wine lover in your life. But up first this morning, we welcome Kirk Wiles to the program. Kirk, as I mentioned, is a co-founder and CEO of Paradise Springs Winery in Clifton, Virginia, right outside of the nation's capital. It's the first winery to open its doors in Fairfax County, and the wines produced here have won several awards, acclaim by the Wine Advocate, and the Chardonnay took top honors in the 2010 Virginia Governor's Cup. Thanks so much for joining us this morning, Kirk.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So first of all, I want to talk a little bit about the history of Paradise Springs, because I was doing some of my research and your property really has a distinct history that goes back a couple generations in your family, too.
Correct. Yeah. So the property actually was an original land grant from Lord Fairfax to our family in 1716. So the land has actually been in the family 300 years. And it features an old log cabin that was built in the late 1700s on the property, which was renovated in 1955 by a student of Frank Lloyd Wright. My great aunt had the renovation undertaken, and then she passed away in 2004 and left the property to my mother and I. And we saw an opportunity to open a winery closer to Washington, D.C., and share the history and kind of the magic of the property with everyone. And here we are today. So it's been a great ride, and it's really great to share the history and be able to keep the land in the family with a vehicle such as a winery for people to come and enjoy.
And the name Paradise Springs, I understand there's a little history behind that name as well.
Yeah, so Paradise Springs was actually a mineral springs on the opposite side of Clifton. In 1910, they commercially produced and bottled water and would ship it into Washington on the trains. And, Clifton used to be a resort town where, past presidents and, people would come in the 1800s to bathe in the mineral springs and enjoy the healing power of the springs. And, there's a little history in the history books of Clifton about all of that. But Paradise Springs was, a water bottling operation in 1910. And while the original springs was not on the property that we are on today, we do have mineral springs on the property. And, we thought it was just a great name to kind of represent the history of Clifton. And we actually have the last four remaining hand-blown Paradise glass water bottles in existence, as well as the window to the original factory on site. And those are all on display at the winery in various locations on our experience tour for people to see. So it's kind of a neat way to segue history. It's got a historical reference name to the town. Some people say turning water to wine.
Right.
And, it's a great name, and we've really embraced it, and people have come to know us for it. So
that's wonderful. And I understand you're celebrating close to a decade of making wine in Virginia. You want to talk a little bit about when the first vines were planted and what the vision your mom, Jane, had for the land?
Sure. So we actually produced our first wine in 2007, working with some consultants here in Virginia, and we planted our vineyard on site in 2008. On the property, the Cabernet Franc vines. It's been about a decade of winemaking in Virginia, and really our focus in producing wines is all on quality. We continue to want to push the boundaries of what Virginia can do as an international wine-growing region. And so everything we've done is about producing the absolute best Virginia wine that we possibly can, which it comes with over the last decade even, and prior to that, we've seen a lot of strides in research and marketing on what varietals to plant and what wines grow best here. So, our lineup of wines that we focus on producing are kind of a mix of, things that people are familiar with, such as Chardonnay and Cab Sauv and Cab Franc, and then there are varietals that probably never heard of, like Petit Mensang, Tanat, Petit Verdot, Vidal Blanc. It's really neat to come out and visit the winery and taste wines because you get a good array of different varietals and learn something new. You know, so I think Virginia has really kind of come into its own in that respect, and that we're embracing what Virginia does very well rather than trying to be another wine region. I think that's why over the last decade you've seen a lot of strides in the quality winemaking going on, and we're really excited about where the industry is going.
Yeah, it's really fascinating to me. I moved to Virginia in 2006 and lived in Charlottesville and worked in the TV market here for a while. And, you know, and even 10 years ago, people were still kind of, they were unsure about Virginia wine. And really to see the evolution over the past decade has been very impressive. And like you mentioned, I really think it's because we're really embracing the diversity within Virginia, the diversity within the different terroirs and microclimates across the Commonwealth. And, you know, for the longest time, it was, you know, just very few grapes. And we're seeing success with so many things, including, you know, Bordelais varietals, like you mentioned, with the Petit Verdot. And that looks like you do a lot of whites, you do reds as well. But I wanted to talk a little bit about your PVT, which sounds like your flagship red.
Yeah, it's kind of become a blend that we've just really launched the inaugural vintage of it. But it is one of our big, bold reds. It's a 50-50 blend of Petit Verdot and Tannat. And we're really big on both of those varietals. Our winemaker is very big on them. Being kind of that style of wine that you can lay down that has great ageability in Virginia and can really produce a complex wine. Tannat's kind of that big structure backbone of it, and Petit Verdot kind of slides in and adds that nice little finesse to it. So it's a blend that we're very excited about. It's one that we'll only make in great vintage years, and the amount we make depends on the quality of the vintage and what we think in the cellar. So, you know, at some point, you know, over the year, we'll go in and taste through the different barrels of, you know, Tannat and Petit Verdot and kind of decide what can go into that blend. And we really don't know how much we're going to make and what we're going to make of it. But if the quality is there, then we'll make it. And so, you know, it's a blend that we're really excited about. The first two vintages that we've released, or actually the 13 vintages that's not been released but bottled, both of them have received 91 points from Robert Parker's The Wine Advocate, mm-hmm. Which is really exciting. Anytime you receive over a 90-point rating, especially for Virginia from a major publication, you know, it's something to get excited about because we are still a little bit off the radar of the region. So to get that recognition from such a international wine critic, I think is a win for the entire state. And, you know, we're just excited about the wine, you know, sharing it with everyone. And we're excited to see where that blend continues to go and how it evolves and bottled over time. And so it's a blend that's unique to us, and we're excited about it.
Yeah, I think that's so exciting to see Virginia kind of take off with the red wines. For the longest time, people were like, oh, the whites are okay, but the reds, they have a long way to go. But I really think we're really coming into our own, particularly with those types of varietals, Petit Verdot, Tannat, and the Bordelais varietals like Cab Franc is doing quite well across the state as well. And like your portfolio, like so many other winemakers, you have a wide range from Chardonnay to Viognier to a Summit Blanc, which is a blend of Vidal and Traminette. And then your reds, your other reds include a Cab Franc, a Tannat, and a Melange?
Yeah, and so, you know, we also have a Meritage blend as well.
Okay.
So Meritage and Melange are both Bordeaux blend varietals. And it kind of allows us some blending flexibility in the cellar. We can go and build two distinctive wines, one being Melange that's a little more approachable early on, a little more fruit friendly, you know, and that we can meet a better price point at as well. And Meritage kind of being some of the best of our barrels in the cellar. So it's a very traditional kind of, you know, way of doing blends in Bordeaux and in Napa, going in and having two different tiers where you can really, you know, take the best of the best and put them into a greater style wine, and then taking those barrels that maybe are a little more approachable early on and making a better, you know, more competitive price point wine. A great example is Opus One, you know, does that with their wine, and they have, little people know that they have a younger blend called Overture, mm-hmm. that retails for under $100 at the winery. And so it's a very common technique, and it just allows us some blending flexibility and ultimately allows us to make a better wine at that top tier.
No, I was going to say at that top tier, sorry to interrupt you, at the top tier, you know, we look at Virginia Reds, and I think people in general have had a hard time spending more than, say, $40, $50 a bottle for Virginia Reds, but we're seeing some superb quality coming out. Can you explain to the consumer, the listener out there, how those price points, how you come up with those price points, I guess, and why certain wines should cost that much?
Well, I mean, there's a lot that goes into it. You know, farming in Virginia is not cheap, first of all. And so when you're able to select, starts with a great vineyard site and planting vines and getting some quality fruit to really grow over, you know, when you plant a vine, it takes 3 to 4 years to even get fruit from it. So, you know, farming in Virginia is more costly than other regions because of some of the challenges we face with, you know, animal pressure and humidity and unpredictable weather towards harvest time. But so that's really where some of the costs start. And then, you know, a lot goes into producing wine. I mean, when you start talking about putting some of the best oak barrels on the planet and putting your wines in some of these barrels, you know, that the top wines in Bordeaux, first growths, are aging in, you know, it makes a real difference. But those barrels are also very expensive. And importing them into Virginia, we don't have the economy to scale here. So, you know, things like shipping, you know, our barriers of entry. So there's a lot of costs that go into those top-tier wines. And I'm a big believer that what you put in, you get out. And so you really work that land and farm, you know, your vineyard in a proper way and drop fruit, which is one of the hardest things to do. You know, it helps to produce a better fruit at the harvest time. You know, putting the best into your wines, whether it be great oak barrels and then, you know, time and aging potential and allowing them the proper time before releasing them. I mean, that all goes into a bottle of wine. The important thing for the consumer to realize is that here in Virginia, we're still on a small scale level of making wine. And so what you're receiving is a small, handcrafted, you know, batch of wine that is very unique to the region that has, you know, a lot of attention, a lot of love and care to it. And we're not, you know, mass wine producing factories like other regions have. And so, you know, there's a little more attention to detail on everything. And so when you really get to that top level, top tier wine, there's a lot that's gone into it. And it should be appreciated a lot more.
Now, absolutely. And I always try, you know, one of the premises of starting this program was to help educate the consumers on, you know, there's a reason why some bottles cost $10, $15 and a reason why some bottles are premium bottles and cost $50, $70, $100. There's so much that goes into the berry to the bottle process. So I always love to give our guests an opportunity to explain that a little bit because they really are special wines. They're artisan products and you can taste the soil in which they were grown, which is such a cool thing. I want to talk briefly about...
Just to knock on that one point one more time, you know, I firmly believe that, you know, Virginia's top wines are actually undervalued in the international marketplace just because Virginia is not as known of a winemaking region as Bordeaux, California, and other places around the planet. So, you know, I'm happy to take our wines and put them up against other wines in a similar price point. You know, we actually do a fun event every year right at the Super Bowl time, we call it the Super Bowl of Wines. And we go out and we get wines that are from other regions, same varietal, same vintage year, same price point. And we'll brown bag them and pour them blind against our varietals from that same vintage year and everything. And, you know, have people kind of score them and vote on them and talk about them. And it's really to educate the consumer that I think at Virginia's top level, our wines are undervalued and that we can compete with anyone in the world.
And I absolutely think that is the best way to really appreciate wine is to get 3 or 4 different wines, brown paper bag them, and blind taste people on them of the same vintage across many different regions. And I think that's the best way to really appreciate what's in your glass. Real quickly, before we run out of time, I just want to give you an opportunity to talk briefly about your Santa Barbara venture.
Yeah, so we actually have just expanded our winery operations and opened a second winery out in Santa Barbara, California. And the idea was to go into another region with our brand and diversify our portfolio and produce some very high-quality small-batch wines and, you know, hopefully share the story of what we've done in Virginia and share the wines of what we've done here out in another winemaking region and vice versa, bringing some wines from a different region back here. So our focus out there has been very high quality. We are, we're in some of the best vineyards in Santa Rita Hills producing Pinot Noir. Chardonnay. We also produce a Sauvignon Blanc and a Bordeaux blend of an inner AVA called Happy Canyon. And so it's been a great project so far. And actually, just last night, I signed a lease on a tasting room spot in downtown Santa Barbara. So there'll be some announcements coming soon with that and where that is and when to look for an opening of Paradise Springs Santa Barbara out on the West Coast.
That's-
and what I'm excited about is sending some Virginia wines out to that tasting room there and being able to share the story of Virginia with in the heart of California. And hopefully that'll put a little more spotlight on what we're doing here as well. And vice versa, you know, sharing wines that we're producing out there with people here in Virginia.
So you truly are bicoastal now.
Yeah, we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, you're truly bicoastal now. Tough life, right?
Absolutely. It's really tough in the wintertime, too, when all the snow comes and you got to fly out there. So,
well, congratulations on the Santa Barbara venture and look forward to hearing more about that in the coming years. And for more information and to order your wines, then go to your website, right?
Yeah, ParadiseSpringsWinery.com. And both the Santa Barbara and Virginia wines are available online. So we can ship to most states around the country. Or you can call us at the winery. Come visit us at the winery. We're open 7 days a week. Live music on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And, you know, we've got some great wines, and we're always changing our tasting lineup. And we encourage everyone to come out and learn a little bit about what we're doing here in Virginia and learn a history of the property and, you know, come enjoy some wine with some friends.
So much history and so much fabulous wine across Virginia. Kirk, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it. And again, go ahead and visit the website, ParadiseSpringsWinery.com, for more information and tasting room hours. Up next, we're talking unique holiday gifts with Mike Prieto of Barrel Art. Stay with us.
Oh, I love the sounds of fall in Virginia.
The leaves rustling, football games,
forks popping, glasses filling,
wine sipping.
I love wine sipping. It's like singing, only without sound.
Okay, let's hear it again.
Fall is the perfect time for Virginia wine. Visit virginiawine.org to discover your local crush.
And welcome back to the show. Thanks so much for staying with me. If you're just joining us, we are welcoming Mike Prieto to the program. He is owner of Barrel Art down in Hampton Roads, and he's one of the few artisan barrel furniture makers in the country, and he uses every single part of the barrel and is producing some amazing artisan products that would make for a fantastic Christmas gift for the wine lover in your life. So, Mike, I want to welcome you to the program. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. And I know I've talked to you a few times over the years, and I've bought some of your products, and how you began is such an interesting story. So would you like to share that with our audience, how you started Barrel Art?
Sure. It kind of was a business that was kind of grown out of necessity. My wife and I, she's active duty. We moved over to Germany, and while we were waiting to find a place to live there, our household goods was in a warehouse, and the warehouse burned down. And there was about 125 families that lost everything, all their household goods that was in the temporary storage. I wasn't working at the time, so I decided to start rebuilding some furniture for the things that we lost, and you know, made some of the essentials, like some tables and a bed frame and a couple of other pieces. And then I decided to make something for myself after I kind of, you know, got up and going and learned the new craft of woodworking.
So how did you learn the art of woodworking? Obviously, it was out of necessity. You needed furniture. You lost everything. And so how did you get started with that?
There was actually an amazing wood shop on base there in Germany. And there was an English master carpenter there that would teach people. And so he took me under his wing, and he taught me, you know, woodworking, for, you know, the beginnings from safety, you know, all the way up to, you know, doing dovetails and everything. So it just kind of, because I had nothing but time on my hands there, I was able to really get immersed in it and, you know, pick up on it pretty quickly.
Before your family was relocated back to the States in the Norfolk area, you did you have an opportunity to meet with other, you know, coopers or producers that were with their barrels and things like that to build those relationships?
Yes, and that's kind of what happened after I built my first piece, which was a bar out of a barrel. That's kind of what started everything. Our friends would come over for dinner, they would see it, and they'd ask me to make them one. So then it became, okay, well, now I got to source some barrels to fill these, you know, orders that I was kind of doing on the side for people. And I started getting more and more ideas out of, like, some of the scrap pieces that I would have. And or you know, somebody would suggest, hey, could you do this? And, I, you know, I'd try to make it. So for like the last year that we were living over there in Europe, I spent the time finishing up my business degree and making those contacts to be able to turn this into a business when we move back into the U.S. And a key part of it is having a steady source of barrels. If I don't have barrels to work with, then I don't have a business. So
no, absolutely. Are you using all European barrels? Are you using some American barrels as well? Or
well, something else that I wasn't expecting when I got back here to the States was the craft beer industry boom. And so the competition for barrels over here is pretty intense just to get the used barrels. The craft brewers want the used barrels to age their beers in. So they have driven the price of the used barrels up. But because I had made those contacts in Europe, I'm still able to use those contacts to get my barrels from France and Spain.
And I discovered you, I think about 2 years ago, I was searching for a riddling rack for my new home, and I was searching and searching and searching, and, you know, there were several stores that carried them, but they were prefab, half of them weren't even real wood, and I stumbled across your website, and you were, you know, a local artisan, and I bought that. It's such a beautiful piece in my home, and I know from riddling racks that are from sourced from Champagne. Tell us about some of the other things in your portfolio, because you really have a wide range of gifts that would be perfect for the wine lover, for the hard-to-get, hard person to buy for this holiday season.
Well, yeah, the Riddling Racks is the only thing that I do carry that's not made from barrels. I do import those from Epernay. Again, that was another connection I was able to make while I was over there. So we do have the authentic Riddling Racks mm-hmm. from the caves in Epernay, France, which is, like you mentioned, that where they make the champagne. But, yeah, everything else is made from the barrels. We have serving trays, flights for the beer drinkers, bourbon drinkers, wine drinkers. I even have a dessert flight now for restaurants. We have Lazy Susan's serving trays. We're doing pens now out of the scrap pieces. And I think you mentioned before, we don't waste any part of the barrel. So even our scraps, if we're not turning them into pens, we'll bag them up and sell them as barbecue smoking chips, which I got to tell you, that's all that I use now in my smoker is it's French white oak with the wine soaking in the chip. It gives meats an amazing flavor.
That sounds amazing. I haven't tried those. We'll have to check those out. But you really, a part of it is really making sure you're utilizing every single part of that barrel, not wasting anything.
That's right. And we did have piles of hoops left over. That was the last challenge that I had, was not knowing what to do with all the hoops. We would use them some of the pieces, but not for as much as I would for the wood itself. So in the last couple months, I've just started making what I'm calling hoop art. We do everything from sailboats to suns to hearts, any shape that you can imagine. We're bending the hoops and using welding to create new art just from the metal hoops, too.
And I think it'd be remiss if we didn't mention that you make, for the pet lovers out there and the wine lovers, you make dog beds out of wine barrels, too.
Yeah, that's a real popular item. We make them for dogs. For small dogs, we do a round, like kind of like a quarter barrel. And for the bigger dogs, we cut the barrel right down the middle, and that'll hold a dog up to 100 pounds. Comes with a nice pillow inside to keep them comfortable.
I think my little golden retriever, Sophie, might be getting a special gift this year because they're so cool if my husband lets me get one. Now, Mike, you really do some beautiful work, and I always love hearing the entrepreneurial stories of this was something that was purely driven by necessity, and you're really making it work, and you're a local artisan, and what a great a gift to give somebody this holiday season, something unique, something supporting a local business. I think it's just a perfect idea to do that, and I encourage all the listeners to go to your website. It's barrel-art.com to take a look at all of your products, because you make so many different products out there. There's literally something for everyone in your portfolio. Are you doing any trade shows coming up soon? Or
I am. I'm doing a show in Tennessee next week, and locally, well, somewhat locally in Chicks Beach, Virginia. I'll be doing a holiday craft show at the Commonwealth Brewery, which is another one of the customers. We've done a lot of work for breweries in the area, whether it be flight signs, tap handles, all sorts of stuff, too.
That's awesome. And again, go ahead and go to Mike's website, Barrel Art. It's barrel-art.com, and check out his portfolio of beautiful products. I don't think you'll be disappointed. Some really great work there and some really great quality as well. Mike, I appreciate you stopping by today, and I wish you much success, and thanks to you and your wife for serving our country.
Thanks, Crystal. Thank you again for having me, and you have a good holiday season.
Okay. You too. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
And up next, we're talking Wine of the Week. Stay with us.
Oh, I love the flavors of fall in Virginia.
I know, right? Everything's all salted caramel and spiced pumpkin.
And petite verdot-y and sauvignon-y.
Are you thinking what I'm thinking?
Yes, I am. Let's go do a tasting.
Viognier!
Fall is the perfect time for Virginia wine. Visit virginiawine.org to discover your local crush.
And welcome back to the show. We'll get to our Wine of the Week in just a moment. But first, I wanted to make a quick programming note. We just had Mike Prieto with Barrel Art on the show. And I forgot to mention before we let Mike go that he does offer laser engraving on a lot of his products. And he also offers worldwide shipping. Again, if you missed it, the website is barrel-art.com. So go ahead and place your holiday orders early. And I can't think of a better way to get that hard-to-buy person on your list a really great, unique gift and support a local business and a military family at the same time. And speaking of military families, with Veterans Day just a few days away, I thought it was rather appropriate to feature a military-centric wine for our Wine of the Week. And for that, we're heading up to Pyramid Cellars. So Pyramid Cellars offers a wine called Black Ops. And as Chris Pyramid puts it, it is a covert operation long in the works, and it is a red proprietary blend. They can't tell you what's in it in honor of our special forces. So go to PyramidCellars.com and check that wine out. It's $42 a bottle. They offer military discounts. If you head up to the winery, you can also get a taste of that, or you can purchase the bottle online. Chris is a veteran himself, and he wanted to do this in honor of our veterans. And in honor of Veterans Day, I just want to wish all of our military men and women in uniform and their families a happy Veterans Day, and to thank you for your service. It is much appreciated. Until next time, I look forward to seeing you same place, same time next Saturday. Have a fabulous weekend filled with great wine and great company. Cheers.